to bring you a story that is just unfolding.
They also think we need to eliminate all uncertainty before we take any action. It's certainly not a risk analysis they apply to other areas where they take dramatic action, you know, the Iraq war being a glaring case in point.
The United States and China obviously have differences, but look at the things we have in common. We need a stable world to allow...
That's a big question.
Now we got time.
If you don't know how to fix it, stop breaking it.
If we act boldly, we can make significant progress in reversing the potential
damage. We need to take some responsibility.
Cap and trade, you think that's really the answer?
Yeah, it is.
Short and sweet.
When you start cutting your energy bill, you start giving your city opportunity.
Welcome to EcoTalk, same program with a new, different open. Had to get rid of George W. Bush at the top. He lasted a little bit longer than we would have liked. On today's program, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change continues its authoritative march towards a more accurate picture of climate change, the effects we're already seeing, and the likely prognosis of what's going to come if we're not going to get active about some of these problems. We'll be speaking with Chris Miller. He is the climate change expert for Greenpeace. He's monitoring those proceedings right now. And we'll find out also what's to be expected from this part two of the IPCC report, this report based on consensus. That alone, by definition, makes it a very important release. And climate change, as it is currently measured in Vermont, we are going to talk with a sugar maker in Vermont, a farmer there who says they are already feeling the effects, and Arthur Burnt has filed a class action suit to try to preserve the Earth's sweetest resources. And some food for thought will also come in the next segment. We'll be speaking with author Rhianne Eisler. She's the author of a book called The Real Wealth of Nations, and she's talking about a concept called caring economics. And finally, we'll wrap up with Tim Little. He's with the Rose Foundation, and they are talking about what happens when you get shareholder activism combined with toxins in common household products, how that all affects the bottom line. And without further delay, want to bring in our first guest. He is Chris Miller with Greenpeace, monitoring the, I guess it's negotiations taking place in Belgium. Is that a good way to describe it?
Hi, Betsy. It is a good way to describe it. The meetings are continuing in the lead up to the report release, and the meetings essentially are literally going line by line, sentence through sentence, through the summary that will be released on the impacts to global warming.
Now, I mentioned Washington because, of course, we started the week with the Supreme Court ruling saying the EPA, in fact, did have authority to regulate greenhouse gas emissions, which basically just took away their excuse to not deal with it. And the latest twist on that story is that President Bush is defiant, saying that he thinks his action to control greenhouse gas emissions so far has been sufficient. I would imagine there's a lot of people there who would disagree.
That's right. I mean, I think, you know.
And you don't have to go across the pond to find people who disagree. Sorry.
It comes at this important time. And, in fact, Greenpeace was one of the original plaintiffs of the lawsuit that the Supreme Court ruled on. But it is just more of the same from the Bush administration. As you know, 6 weeks ago, the first piece of the IPCC report made it unequivocal and clear that man-made pollution is causing global warming. And really, the devil is in the details around global warming. The report released this week will, in fact, be those details.
And what kinds of details? We heard a lot about sea level rises, predictions about that in the first report. Is this one focusing on species extinction? That's what I've heard most about in the leaks. It's only been, you know, dribs and drabs coming out.
That's right. I mean, all we know is what we're reading in terms of leaks in the media. But yeah, there will certainly address species extinction. There will be the details of the report will break out by region, and there'll be a focus across each region. North America will be an important piece of this report. But that's right. I mean, it will reference everything from the plight of the polar bear to, you know, impacts to Greenland ice sheets, what that may mean for sea level rise. There will be a focus on extreme weather and hurricanes in the Atlantic, what that may mean for, you know, states like Florida, you know, drought situations in the Midwest. This will lay out not only species but ecosystems and weather patterns. It will be a rather grim and frightening look of what's ahead if we don't act.
And we can add penguins to that list of cute creatures that are affected by climate change. I don't know if you caught the 60 Minutes piece on the penguin population in Antarctica being... That was dramatic and hasn't gotten quite, I don't think, the attention, the buzz that I expected it would this week. Maybe folks I talked to don't watch 60 Minutes. But how did that strike you? I mean, something like a 60 or 80% decrease in the penguin population noted already, if I got that statistic correct?
I think that's right. And it is, you know, it's frightening, and it is just another example of why this problem is so important. The impacts are profound and span the globe. The pieces of the problem are equally large, and that may be why it has been so difficult for some to understand the kinds of actions that we need to take. But there is no doubt that when the report is released, it is our hope that this is really going to drive a focus on the kinds of policy decisions that need to be made to move, you know, towards solutions.
And it's also always dramatic, like Al Gore's movie so dramatically showed, when you have the pictures and they showed the melting glaciers and where the glaciers had moved. And they talked about how, I guess, a key problem for the penguins is not enough krill in the water, and that has a direct connection to water temperature, sea temperatures. And they said, well, 1 degree change can make all the difference. And that's what's so dramatic is what would be perceived if it's, you know, it's just now being perceived as a very minor fluctuation having this major impact on just one population.
And, you know, I mean, you know, when we hear about potential temperature rises in the future, you know, it is my understanding we've seen in press reports that it is likely this report will suggest a sort of 3 to 7 degree temperature rise globally, average temperature rise across the globe between now and the end of the century. And, you know, it doesn't sound like that big a deal. But what that means for places like the Arctic, where you know, a 3 to 7 degree Fahrenheit change globally might mean a 12, 15 degree increase in temperatures in the Arctic. Even though they don't sound like a lot, as you suggested, a 1 degree temperature change in ocean temperatures can have a profound impact on, you know, the food chain for penguins. So these are dramatic changes that are being predicted.
And occurring more rapidly than many scientists had even foreseen. And who could foresee this?
One example of that was, a study done last year that suggested that, in fact, the Arctic Ocean might be free of ice in the summer for the first time, you know, ever. By mid-century, by 2050. Mm-hmm. The newest science tells us that could happen now as early as 2040. So things are accelerating in a way that climate models were not showing, you know, just a year or two ago.
Another trend that could be dramatically peaking about that time is the fish species in the ocean. I understand that by the year 2040, 2050, if we continue on this course, the major fish species will be almost gone from the oceans by mid-century.
It is a shocking and frightening thing, and to think of the impacts all the way up the food chain that something like that would have is stunning.
And not just our choice of seafood at our local diner. Hard to imagine we're here so quickly, you know, so dramatically. And yet, I don't know, do you sense there's certainly growing concern, there's certainly growing awareness finally, but I don't see panic, but I still don't quite hear everyday folks talking about how startled they are to hear these things. But
no, I think you're right. I think the good news is, though, much like the issue of global warming itself, I believe that we are moving towards a tipping point in terms of public opinion and action. Even 6 months ago, we did not have the kind of focus on this issue that we do now. Congress is holding hearings on almost a daily basis. We have, you know, the CEOs of companies like General Electric and BP and DuPont coming together to call for an 80% reduction in CO2, a cap on CO2 by mid-century, something that would have been hard to imagine, you know, a year or so ago.
Of course, the IPCC report doesn't include recommendations, right? They're just getting a consensus on the science, which alone is a huge endeavor.
That's right. I mean, so the first two pieces are looking at, you know, the first piece was the science. The second piece is on impacts. You know, the third piece may have some prescriptions for how one might adapt and mitigate climate changes. But at the end of the day, what it does is provide the scientific background for policymakers to then address the problem.
And so what's going on now on the eve of the release is just they're going line by line, trying to get a consensus on the wording.
That's right, and it is not. It's a painful and arduous process, I think, but you know, it makes the document that much stronger. You know, the fact that even though the Bush administration continues to question the science, continues to suggest that unabated growth in global warming pollution is okay. It is true that, you know, with the release of the first piece of this report that looked at the science that said that there was, you know, it was now clear that man-made global warming pollution was driving global warming. The fact that the U.S. delegation, in fact, signed off on that makes the report even that much stronger.
Chris Miller, thank you so much for your comments, and we'll be looking forward to hearing the results of the IPCC report, and we will be getting, of course, lots of expert reaction to it. When we come back, we're going to be talking to a maple farmer in Vermont who can tell us all about how climate change is affecting his crops firsthand.